This audiobook isn't about motivation. It's not about feel-good affirmations or temporary hacks to boost your mindset. Because feel-good affirmations or temporary hacks is not going to work for you, and why, you might ask. Because there is a struggle for power raging inside you. How to control your mind. Every day, every decision, every dream left unrealized. The enemy? Not your circumstances, not other people. It's your own mind. More specifically, the part of your mind you never consciously chose. The part that sabotages, delays, doubts, and destroys. Introduction. This audiobook is your guide to confronting that inner saboteur. It will take you deep into the hidden layers of your subconscious, the programs you didn't write, but that run your life. You'll learn why you hesitate when you want to act, why you quit when you're about to break through, why you keep repeating patterns you swore you'd never fall into again. But more importantly, you'll learn how to take your mind back. Each chapter is a weapon, each insight, a tool. And by the time you finish, you won't just understand yourself, you'll be able to reprogram yourself. Because once you realize the enemy isn't the world, but the code running silently inside your mind, that's when you start winning. Chapter 1. The Enemy Within, Exposing the Mind Saboteur. Have you ever wondered why, despite having good intentions, a clear plan, and even strong motivation, you still end up sabotaging your own progress? It's not bad luck. It's not the world out to get you. The real culprit, the one pulling the strings behind your every hesitation, doubt, and delay, is your own mind. More specifically, it's your subconscious programming. The part of you that operates in the dark, silent, invisible, and most of the time in total control. From the moment we're born, our minds begin to absorb information like a sponge. Beliefs, behaviors, emotional reactions, rules about how life should work. And most of that comes from parents, culture, school, religion, and early emotional experiences. By the time you're 7 years old, your mental operating system is nearly fully installed. But here's the kicker. You didn't choose the code. You inherited it. And unless you consciously rewrite it, that code runs your life. Think about this. Your conscious mind is like the captain of a ship. It can direct, choose, and will things into motion. But the subconscious, that's the engine room. It doesn't think. It just follows orders it was given long ago, even if those orders are outdated, irrational, or flat-out self-destructive. You want to be wealthy? Your conscious mind says yes. But if your subconscious believes money is evil or you're unworthy of success, you'll unconsciously repel wealth. You'll procrastinate, overlook opportunities, self-sabotage. Why? Because the subconscious always wins. Not because it's stronger, but because it's always on, running 95% of the show. Let that sink in. Most of your daily actions, decisions, emotional reactions are not conscious. They're automatic, habitual, pre-recorded loops. So here's the hard truth. The greatest enemy you will ever face is not external. Not a boss, not your ex, not your circumstances. It's the hidden programming within your own mind. And until you confront it, you will continue to play a game rigged against you, by you. But don't be discouraged, because once you understand how the mind works, you can begin to work it. You can rewire the patterns. You can change the code. The path begins with awareness. Start by observing your thoughts. Not just what you're thinking, but why you're thinking it. Notice the internal resistance that shows up when you try to do something bold. Pay attention to the stories you tell yourself. I'm not good enough. I'll fail. It's too late for me. Every story is a program, and every program can be rewritten. This chapter is your wake-up call. Your mind is not the enemy, unless you let it remain unconscious. But the moment you shine a light on it, you reclaim your power. So ask yourself, who is really running my life? Me or the unexamined programs installed in childhood? The real war is not out there. It's within. And this is the beginning of your liberation. Chapter 2. The Invisible Code. How your subconscious runs the show. What if everything you do, every choice, every reaction, every belief, isn't really yours? What if it's all running on a silent operating system you didn't install? The subconscious mind is not just a concept in psychology. It's your actual code base. And unless you rewrite it, your life will keep echoing the same patterns, dressed up in new faces, jobs, or places. Think of your mind like a computer. Your conscious thoughts? That's the screen. What you see, what you click. But the subconscious? That's the source code running beneath. It controls everything, even if you're not aware of it. You might say, "But I want to be rich, I want to be happy, I want to be confident." Sure, that's the screen talking. But if the code underneath says, "I don't deserve wealth," or "Success is dangerous," or "Love always leads to pain," then guess what? The screen loses. The origin of the code. Here's the part most people never examine. That code was installed early, long before you had the tools to defend yourself. Every experience in your childhood, every emotion you weren't allowed to express, every adult who told you, "You can't," "You're too much," or "That's not realistic," they were programming you. By age 7, your subconscious mind is already running the show. By age 14, it's reinforced. By adulthood, it's running loops so tight that you don't even realize you're trapped. You're not lazy. You're not weak. You're not unmotivated. You're just running code that says, "Stay safe. Don't grow. Don't risk." Because at some point, growth hurt, and the subconscious only cares about survival, not your dreams. The enemy wears familiar clothes. You ever find yourself self-sabotaging at the edge of a breakthrough? You get the opportunity you've been waiting for, and then you ghost it. You're offered love, and then you push it away. You make money, and then you find a way to lose it. That's not you failing. That's your subconscious winning. It's keeping you in alignment with the code it believes is safe. Even if that safety means chaos, poverty, or loneliness, if that's what's familiar, the code will choose it. Every time. Because to your subconscious, familiar equals safe, and safe equals survival. So you wonder why you can't change? It's because you're trying to paint a new future on top of a corrupted blueprint. You don't rise to your goals. You fall to your programming. That's the brutal truth most people ignore. You can visualize all you want. You can say affirmations in the mirror until your voice cracks. But if the code underneath says, "This isn't who I am," then it will delete everything you build. Effort is not enough. Conscious desire is not enough. You must rewrite the code. Because right now, you're not just fighting the world, you're fighting you. And if you don't learn how to take control of the script running inside your mind, you'll keep playing the same role in a movie you didn't choose. Chapter 3. Mental Loops. Escaping the Trap of Thought Addiction. Why do we keep thinking the same thoughts, day in, day out, expecting a different result? Because the mind, left unchecked, becomes addicted to its own patterns. And thought is the most subtle addiction of all. Most people don't realize this. The average human thinks around 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts per day. And here's the kicker. Over 90% of those thoughts are the same ones you had yesterday. So you wake up, check your phone, think about your to-do list, remember who hurt you, worry about money, compare yourself to others, and replay old stories. You do this day after day, and then wonder why your life doesn't change. It's not that change is impossible. It's that your mind is trapped in a loop, and loops don't break on their own. The addictive nature of thought. Thoughts aren't just electrical signals, they're chemical. Each thought triggers the release of neurochemicals: dopamine, cortisol, serotonin. And just like with any substance, your brain gets addicted to those chemical cocktails. If you've been angry for years, your brain is addicted to the chemistry of anger. If you've been sad for years, your brain is addicted to the chemistry of sadness. If you've been anxious for years, your brain is addicted to the chemical high of worry. Your body becomes the mind. It starts craving those emotions. And without even realizing it, you start unconsciously creating situations just to feel them again. You think you're reacting to life, but in reality, you're relapsing. the thoughts that think you. Here's a hard truth. Most of your thoughts aren't even yours. They're echoes of your past, echoes of your culture, echoes of your parents' fears, your teachers' criticisms, your society's limits. You think you're the thinker. But if you zoom out, you'll see. Most of the time, you're being thought. You're not living with a mind. You're living inside one. And unless you learn to break the pattern, your future will just be a more polished version of your past. The illusion of thinking your way out. We've been conditioned to believe we can think our way through anything. But here's the paradox. The same mind that created the loop cannot break it. You can't outthink an addiction to thought. You don't need more thoughts. You need awareness. Silence isn't the absence of thinking. It's the space where real power begins. When you learn to observe your thoughts without following them, you interrupt the loop. And in that gap, between stimulus and reaction, you reclaim your power. That's where the old program begins to glitch. That's where new code can be written. The exit strategy. So, how do you begin? Not by thinking harder, but by becoming the watcher. Sit still, breathe, watch your thoughts come. Don't judge them. Don't chase them. Just notice the loop. The moment you observe a thought without being it, the loop weakens. And each time you do it, you starve the addiction. The goal isn't to stop thinking. It's to stop being possessed by thought. You were never meant to be at war with your mind. You were meant to master it. Because once you escape the loop, the mind becomes a tool, not a trap. The mind becomes a tool, not a trap. Chapter 4. How to Hack the Subconscious. Most people try to change their lives by changing what they do. They set goals, read self-help books, repeat affirmations, build new routines. But nothing sticks. Why? Because they're trying to rewrite the program from the surface, and the real code runs deep below, in the subconscious. This chapter is about learning to speak the only language your subconscious mind truly understands. Not words, not logic, not even effort. But emotion, repetition, imagery, and belief. The subconscious runs the show. Let's get something straight. Your conscious mind is not in charge. It only governs about 5% of your behavior. The remaining 95%, your habits, reactions, decisions, beliefs, are all run by your subconscious. Think of your subconscious as a massive underground computer server, constantly running automated scripts based on the past. It doesn't think. It doesn't question. It just executes. And that means, if your subconscious has been programmed with beliefs like, I'm not enough, money is hard to make, people can't be trusted, good things don't last, then no matter how hard you try on the surface, you'll always sabotage yourself to match the code below. Until you reprogram that code, the system will always reset to default. Where did the program come from? The first 7 years of your life were a hypnosis. During that time, your brain was primarily operating in theta waves, the same brainwave state used in deep meditation and hypnosis. In other words, everything you heard, saw, and felt as a child became truth to your subconscious. If you grew up around fear, your nervous system wired itself around anxiety. If you were criticized often, your self-worth was reduced to a fragile shell. If you were made to feel invisible, you began to equate silence with safety. You didn't choose these programs, you inherited them. But here's the beautiful thing, you can rewrite them. Not with brute force, but with precision. Why surface changes don't stick. Let's say you write down a goal. I want to be confident. You say it, you visualize it, you even act it out. But deep inside, your subconscious holds a core belief that says, confidence is dangerous. People who shine get rejected. Guess what happens? Self-sabotage. You'll unconsciously do things to remain small, unnoticed, or insecure. Because deep down, your subconscious believes it's protecting you. It's not trying to ruin your life. It's trying to keep you safe, based on outdated information. This is why willpower alone fails. You're trying to steer a ship with the sails pointing the other way. To change the direction of your life, you must speak directly to the subconscious. And that requires a different language. The four keys to subconscious reprogramming. There are four main ways to reprogram your inner code. First, repetition in an altered state. Your subconscious is most impressionable in theta state, just before sleep or right after waking. This is your golden window. During this time, repeating empowering affirmations, visualizations, or desired beliefs can actually sink in. Say your affirmations as if they're already true. Feel them. Don't just think, "I am confident." Breathe it into your body. Let your nervous system believe it's real. Do this consistently, and the subconscious will begin to accept the new code as familiar. 2. Imagery and emotion. The subconscious doesn't speak words. It speaks pictures and feelings. So, if you want to install a new belief, imagine it vividly. See it. Feel it. Smell it. Make it real in your inner world. Don't just affirm, "I am abundant." Visualize the lifestyle that matches that abundance. Feel the gratitude, the freedom, the peace. Let your body believe it's already here. The stronger the emotion tied to the image, the faster the installation. The subconscious doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's vividly imagined. Use that to your advantage. 3. Breaking the old pattern. Every time you catch yourself acting out an old belief, stopping yourself from speaking up, procrastinating, shrinking, that's a moment of power. Interrupt the pattern. Ask yourself, "What belief am I acting out right now?" Awareness is the first crack in the code. And once you're aware, you can make a new choice, no matter how small. Each new choice lays new neural wiring. Over time, new wiring becomes new behavior, and new behavior becomes a new reality. 4. Environmental reinforcement. Your subconscious is always watching your surroundings. What you watch, listen to, and immerse yourself in either reinforces your old code or seeds new ones. Change your inputs. Listen to audio programs that support your desired identity. Surround yourself with people who already live the reality you want to create. Remove daily exposure to fear, gossip, and toxicity. Your environment is either supporting your reprogramming or undoing it. Be intentional. The identity shift. The deepest layer of reprogramming is identity. You can't just change what you do. You must change who you believe you are. Don't say, "I want to become confident." Say, "I am someone who radiates confidence." Don't say, "I'm trying to be abundant." Say, "Abundance flows to me because that's who I am." The subconscious is always working to keep your external life aligned with your internal identity. Change the identity and the behaviors will follow. The power of present tense programming. Your subconscious doesn't understand future tense. When you say, "I will be successful," it hears, "Success is not here now." And it keeps success in the future, just out of reach. Instead, program in the present. "I am aligned with wealth. I am loved and worthy now. I trust life is working in my favor." Make it current. Make it emotional. Make it real. Beware of conflicting signals. You might be doing all the right things, meditating, visualizing, journaling, but if you're also reinforcing old programs the rest of the day through complaining, self-judgment, or fear, you're sending mixed signals. Your subconscious doesn't respond to isolated rituals. It responds to your dominant state. So the real work is not in what you do once a day. It's in who you are being all day long. Every thought, every reaction, every emotion, they're all votes for your inner program. Choose wisely. You are the coder. You weren't born broken. You were programmed unconsciously. Now you get to consciously reprogram yourself. You don't need to fix yourself. You were never broken. You only need to uninstall the lies. You are not your past. You are not your fears. You are not the story someone else wrote for you. You are the coder now, and the mind you once thought was your enemy, that same mind will become your most powerful ally. Same mind will become your most powerful ally. Chapter 5, Mental Resistance, Why Change Feels Like Death. There's a moment in transformation when you're not who you used to be, but not yet who you are becoming. That moment feels like a void, a free fall. And it's in that space that resistance is loudest, not because something is wrong, but because something is shifting. Change is death to the part of you that's always survived by being the same. When people talk about transformation, they often picture freedom, clarity, abundance. And while all of that is real, there's a shadow side no one warns you about. That part where the mind starts panicking, whispering that you're unsafe, that you're making a mistake, that you're abandoning something important. That voice isn't your enemy, but it is the voice of your old programming doing its job, to keep you alive by keeping you the same. The subconscious mind is wired for familiarity, not success. Its first priority is survival. And to your survival system, known suffering is often safer than unknown happiness. If you've lived years being broke, overthinking, lonely, self-critical, those patterns have become home. They've written themselves into your nervous system like background music. Even if they make you miserable, they're predictable. And to the subconscious, predictable equals safe. Now, try to imagine changing that. Imagine stepping into a reality where you're powerful, magnetic, decisive, open to love, aligned with abundance. Sounds great consciously, right? But to the part of your mind that only trusts repetition, it sounds like a threat. This is why, when you're on the verge of breaking through, everything suddenly feels harder. Old habits flare up. Procrastination sneaks in. Doubt creeps closer. You start questioning everything. This is resistance, and it's not here to ruin you. It's here because a part of you believes change equals danger. Let's get something straight. Your mind isn't trying to sabotage you. It's trying to protect you in the only way it knows how. It's using outdated software to keep you from getting hurt, embarrassed, rejected, or overwhelmed. But if you don't understand this, you'll think resistance means stop. You'll misinterpret fear as a red light, when in truth it's a yellow one. It means slow down and pay attention, not turn back. The truth is, real change rarely feels good at first. It feels unfamiliar, disorienting, vulnerable. That's because you're not just changing your thoughts, you're changing your identity. You're rewriting the operating system your life runs on. And that takes energy, repetition, and compassion. So how do we move through resistance without triggering full-blown self-sabotage? Let's break it down. Step 1. Normalize the fear response. First, stop thinking something's wrong with you because you feel resistance. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a biological survival response. When you stretch beyond your comfort zone, the amygdala, the brain's threat detection center, lights up. It doesn't know the difference between emotional vulnerability and physical danger. It just senses deviation from the norm and sends out a warning flare. Danger. Don't proceed. That's why it's so important to anticipate this fear in advance. Expect it. Normalize it. Thank it for trying to protect you, but don't let it drive. This isn't about erasing fear. It's about building a relationship with it. Let it speak, but don't give it authority. Step 2. Create micro shifts, not earthquakes. One of the biggest mistakes people make is trying to overhaul everything at once. You don't need a full personality transplant overnight. In fact, going too fast can overwhelm your nervous system and cause snapback. Instead, think in terms of micro shifts, small, repeatable choices that gently stretch your identity. Tiny moves that say, "Hey mind, we're safe here." Want to become someone who speaks up confidently? Start by practicing one brave sentence a day. Want to believe you're worthy of love? Begin with eye contact in the mirror. Want to shift your money beliefs? Start by tracking what you already have with gratitude. Micro shifts signal to your subconscious, "Look, we're doing something new and we didn't die." That's how trust is built. Step 3. Anchor change in the body. Mental resistance isn't just in your head, it lives in your body. Your body remembers who you've been. That's why change feels heavy, stuck, or anxious. The nervous system resists transformation because it hasn't yet learned the new rhythm. So speak to the body in its own language. Breath, movement, presence. When resistance hits, don't argue with it mentally. Drop into the body. Try this. Breathe slowly for 2 minutes. Shake out your limbs to discharge stuck energy. Sit in stillness and name what you're feeling without judgment. These simple practices help regulate your nervous system, turning off the false alarm so you can keep moving forward. Step 4. Separate from the inner critic. Most of us mistake resistance for truth, but it's just a voice, and not a particularly wise one. The inner critic thrives during change. It mimics your voice, borrows memories from your past, and whispers familiar doubts. You'll fail again. Who do you think you are? This isn't you. Recognize that this voice isn't you. It's a survival mechanism built from old pain, childhood conditioning, and societal noise. Give it a name if it helps. The doubter, the protector, old code. Speak to it with curiosity, not fear. I hear you. But we're choosing differently now. By creating space between you and the critic, you reclaim authorship of your story. Step 5. Commit to repetition, not perfection. Here's the quiet truth most people miss. Resistance weakens through consistency, not force. The more you show up, even imperfectly, the more your subconscious adapts. The more you repeat a new behavior or belief, the more it becomes the new familiar. You don't need to believe in your transformation fully. You just need to practice it long enough that your mind stops resisting it. This is how you dissolve the fear that change equals death. You show the mind, through evidence, that change equals life. Befriending the process. You are not broken because change feels hard. You are human. Mental resistance is not your enemy. It's the final guardian at the gate of growth. Its job is to test how badly you want your evolution, to make sure you're serious, to push you into choosing again, even when it's easier not to. You don't have to overpower resistance. You just have to understand it. Love it. Work with it. Because once you move through it, once you choose the unfamiliar and survive, the resistance fades. The new becomes normal. And the mind, once an obstacle, becomes your ally. The death you feared wasn't yours. It was the death of your limitations. Let them go. You're ready for more. Chapter 6. Emotional alchemy, turning triggers into transformation. Most people fear their emotions, not because emotions are dangerous, but because no one ever taught them how to feel without drowning. We're told to stay calm, think positive, don't overreact. So we stuff things down, label them as irrational, or pretend they don't exist. But unprocessed emotion doesn't disappear. It waits. It leaks out through our reactions, our relationships, our self-talk. And the louder the unhealed emotion becomes, the more we try to silence it, with distractions, addictions, perfectionism, or numbness. But what if the very things that trigger you are trying to heal you? This is emotional alchemy. The art of turning your most uncomfortable feelings into your most powerful tools for transformation. Alchemy, in the ancient world, was never just about turning base metals into gold. It was a metaphor for inner refinement, for taking something raw, chaotic, even painful, and using it to uncover something sacred, luminous, and wise. Your emotions are that raw material, and every trigger is an invitation to go deeper, to reveal what's hidden, unspoken, or waiting to be released. The truth about triggers. Let's start by redefining a word that's often misunderstood, trigger. A trigger isn't the problem, it's the messenger. It's the moment something external, a comment, a look, a memory, a failure, activates something unresolved within you. When someone criticizes you and your chest tightens, that's not about the words. It's about a deeper belief you hold. Maybe I'm not good enough. When someone doesn't reply to your message and you spiral into overthinking, that's not about the silence. It's about the echo of being ignored, abandoned, or dismissed in the past. Every trigger is a breadcrumb back to the source, and that source is always internal. But most people never pause long enough to decode the emotion. They react, they shut down, they blame, or they shame themselves for feeling anything at all. This is where the cycle begins and where it can end. Emotional reactions are feedback, not failures. When you're emotionally triggered, your body responds before your mind can explain why. Your breath shortens, your heart races, your stomach churns. These are not flaws, they're feedback. They're your nervous system saying, "There's something here. Pay attention." But instead of paying attention, we usually do one of two things. Suppress the emotion, push it down, pretend it's fine. Project the emotion, lash out, blame others. Both responses keep you trapped in the same emotional loops. Alchemy happens when you choose a third path, to observe, feel, and transform. And the process begins by getting curious instead of reactive. Step 1. Name what you're feeling. It sounds simple, but this is where most people struggle. We were taught math and grammar in school, not emotional literacy. So instead of saying, "I feel shame because I think I failed," we say, "I'm fine." Or worse, "I'm such a mess." To break the pattern, you must give the emotion a name. Why? Because naming it tames it. Neuroscience shows that labeling a feeling helps deactivate the amygdala, the emotional fear center in the brain. It brings awareness online. Try phrases like, "I notice I feel anxious." "I'm experiencing a wave of sadness." "There's some anger showing up right now." This is not weakness. This is self-leadership. Step 2. Ask what it's pointing to. Once you've named the emotion, don't rush to fix it. Instead, ask, "What is this feeling trying to show me?" Behind every intense emotion is a story, a belief, a wound, an unmet need. For example, anger often points to a boundary being crossed. Sadness may reveal something that needs to be let go. Anxiety often signals uncertainty or lack of trust. Envy can highlight a desire you haven't yet owned. Don't moralize your emotions. There are no bad ones. They are data, clues, maps to the parts of you asking for attention, compassion, or clarity. Step 3. Let it move through you. Emotions are energy in motion, but only if you let them move. When you suppress an emotion, it stagnates. It creates tension, fatigue, burnout, or illness. When you over-identify with it, it becomes your identity. "I am anxious. I am broken." The key is to feel without fusing. Let the emotion rise and fall like a wave, and stay present as the observer. You can move emotion through deep, conscious breathing, journaling uncensored thoughts, gentle movement, stretching, shaking, walking, speaking aloud what you feel in a safe space. You don't need to intellectualize everything. Sometimes emotion just wants to be felt fully, and then it passes. Step 4. Rewire the reaction loop. Each time you react from a trigger without awareness, you reinforce a neural pathway, a groove in your brain that says, "When X happens, I must feel Y." But with awareness comes the power to pause, to rewire. Here's how. Notice the trigger as it happens. Name the emotion. "I feel hurt." Locate it in your body. "It's in my chest." Ask the deeper question. "What is this hurt reminding me of?" Breathe into the discomfort. Give it space. Choose a new action. Kindness. Boundaries. Truth. Over time, this practice rewires your brain for presence over panic, choice over compulsion, and awareness over autopilot. Step 5. Make peace with discomfort. Here's the paradox of emotional alchemy. The moment you stop trying to escape discomfort, is the moment it loses control over you. You don't have to like discomfort. But if you can sit with it, without numbing, fixing, or fleeing, it transforms. Why? Because your nervous system learns, I can feel hard things and survive. This is emotional resilience, not the absence of pain, but the presence of capacity, the ability to meet your emotions with strength, compassion, and curiosity, not fear. The gift of triggers. The people who trigger you, the situations that frustrate you, the emotions that scare you, they are not obstacles on your path. They are the path. Because every trigger is a flashlight pointing to the parts of you still waiting to be seen, still waiting to be healed, still waiting to be chosen with love. And when you choose to meet your emotions, all of them, without judgment, something incredible happens. You become whole, no longer at war with yourself, no longer a slave to reactions, no longer defined by your past pain. You become the alchemist, and in your hands, every feeling, even the hardest ones, becomes fuel for your freedom. Becomes fuel for your freedom. Chapter 7. The Mind-Body Loop. How Thoughts Create Chemistry. Your body listens to your mind, not metaphorically, not symbolically, but biologically. Moment to moment, thought by thought, your brain sends chemical messages into your bloodstream that shape how you feel, how you heal, and how you show up in the world. This is not just positive thinking. This is biochemistry. Every time you think a thought, your brain generates a corresponding emotion. And that emotion floods your body with neuropeptides, hormones, and energetic signatures. If you think anxious thoughts, your body produces cortisol and adrenaline. If you think joyful thoughts, it releases dopamine and serotonin. Your body doesn't question whether a thought is real, logical, or helpful. It reacts chemically. This is the mind-body loop, the feedback system through which your thoughts create feelings. Your feelings influence behavior, and your behavior reinforces the original thoughts. And once you understand how this loop works, you gain access to something most people never realize they have. The power to change your internal chemistry by changing your mental patterning. Let's break this down. Every thought is a signal. Your brain doesn't just process information, it broadcasts it. Each thought you think fires a network of neurons in the brain. Neurons that fire together wire together. That means the more you think something, the more automatic it becomes. Think I'm unsafe over and over, and your body adapts to that belief by staying tense, guarded, inflamed. Think, I can't handle this. And your immune system gets the message. Stand down, stay stressed, survive. This isn't spiritual speculation. It's psychoneuroimmunology, the study of how mental states affect the immune system and bodily function. What's fascinating is that your body doesn't know the difference between an imagined threat and a real one. You can be sitting on your couch, perfectly safe, but if your mind replays an argument, a worry, or a worst-case scenario, your body reacts as if it's happening all over again. Your heart rate increases, muscles tighten, breathing becomes shallow, digestion slows, cortisol rises. That's the mind-body loop in motion. And when this loop becomes chronic, when stress becomes a baseline, the body begins to deteriorate. Fatigue, anxiety, chronic pain, hormonal imbalances. These are often not separate physical problems, but the chemical echo of unresolved mental loops. Emotions are chemistry in motion. Let's talk about feelings, not as fleeting moods, but as physical messengers. Every emotion you experience is a chemical state. It has a half-life, a signature, a hormonal footprint. And it doesn't just live in your head. It lives in your tissues, your breath, your immune response. When you feel shame, your body contracts. When you feel joy, it expands. When you feel love, oxytocin floods your system, softening your heart and soothing your nerves. This is why repeating old emotional states, anger, resentment, guilt, becomes addictive. Not just psychologically, but chemically. Your body becomes used to the chemicals associated with those emotions. It starts to crave the familiar state, even if it's painful. This is emotional homeostasis, the body keeping you in the emotional frequency it's most used to. And unless you interrupt the pattern, you'll keep recreating the same internal weather, no matter how many external things you change. The body becomes the memory. After a while, the body doesn't need the original thought to keep the loop going. Let's say you experienced fear repeatedly in your childhood. Eventually, your nervous system memorized fear as a baseline. As an adult, even if the environment has changed, your body may still default to that fear state. Not because you're actually in danger, but because the mind trained the body to expect it. And now, the body is in control. This is when people say, "I know I shouldn't be scared. I know everything is fine. But my body doesn't feel safe." That's not irrational, that's conditioning. When the body becomes more familiar with survival chemistry than peace chemistry, your thoughts start to follow your feelings instead of the other way around. You wake up feeling off, and then your mind invents a reason for it. This is the reversal of the loop, the body triggering the mind, and it reinforces the cycle. Interrupting the loop. So how do you change it? Not by force, not by guilt, but through gentle repetition, awareness, and new experiences. Here are the steps to begin reversing the mind-body loop. 1. Observe without judgment. Become aware of your most repeated thought loops. What's the internal narrative you default to? I'm overwhelmed. I'm not safe. Something's going to go wrong. Don't fight it. Don't label it as bad. Just witness it. This witnessing creates space between stimulus and response, the space where transformation begins. 2. Change the thought. Change the chemistry. Choose one thought pattern to interrupt daily. Instead of, "I'm not safe," repeat, "Right now, I am grounded and supported." Instead of, "I can't handle this," try, "I am more capable than I think." At first, your body won't believe it. That's okay. You're not lying. You're installing a new signal, and with repetition, the body will begin to respond differently. New neurochemicals, new feelings, new behaviors. 3. Regulate the nervous system. You cannot think clearly when your body is in panic. You must downregulate the nervous system. Tools like deep diaphragmatic breathing, cold exposure, or grounding techniques. Gentle movement like walking or yoga. Vagus nerve activation, like humming or gargling. All signal to the body, you are safe now. When safety is restored in the body, the mind opens up to new possibilities. 4. Rehearse future states. Visualization is not fantasy, it's neurological rehearsal. When you visualize a peaceful outcome or a desired future, and feel it as real, you activate the same brain regions as if it were actually happening. You're teaching your body a new chemical experience. 10 minutes a day. Close your eyes. Breathe. Feel the emotional signature of calm, power, success, or love. Let your body memorize it. Because when the body knows peace, the mind no longer chases panic. You are the programmer. You are not just the passenger in the mind-body loop. You are the programmer. And when you take ownership of your mental diet, the thoughts you feed yourself, you shift your biological state. You reduce inflammation. You improve immunity. You sharpen perception. You age slower. You live clearer. Your body becomes your ally instead of your battleground. This is not bypassing pain. This is learning how to process it wisely, to feel your way through the body's messages, and then speak to it in a language it understands. Breath, movement, emotion, attention. You are already wired for healing. Your body is not broken. Your mind is not your enemy. They've simply been looping the same program for too long. When you begin to rewrite that script, with presence, with practice, with love, the loop becomes a spiral. And that spiral is the shape of evolution. You rise. You renew. You return. Not to who you were, but to who you're becoming. Who you're becoming. Chapter 8. Stillness is the shortcut, reclaiming power through inner silence. There is a place within you that's untouched by thought. It exists beneath the stories, beneath the fears, beneath the identity you've built and rebuilt over time. It's not found through effort. It's not accessed by thinking harder, doing more, or fixing yourself. It reveals itself the moment you become still. Stillness is not emptiness. It's presence without noise. It's the eye of the storm, the quiet space between breaths, the moment between thoughts. And it's in that space where all healing begins. This chapter isn't about adding more tools. It's about subtracting noise until what's real can emerge. Because sometimes, the most powerful thing you can do is nothing at all. Your inner noise is not your fault, but it is your responsibility. From the moment you wake up, the mind begins narrating, "What do I have to do today? What if I mess this up? Why did that person look at me that way? Am I enough? Am I safe?" It's constant. It's loud. And most of it is recycled from yesterday. This noise isn't you. It's a product of memory, habit, and conditioning. The mind thinks it's helping, predicting, analyzing, problem-solving. But it ends up creating a fog that disconnects you from the present moment. What's underneath all that thinking? Stillness, awareness, truth. This is why inner silence isn't passive. It's revolutionary. It cuts through the script. It exposes what's real. And it resets your relationship with your own mind. Why stillness feels uncomfortable at first? If silence makes you anxious, you're not alone. Most people don't avoid stillness because they're lazy or distracted. They avoid it because it exposes what's underneath the noise. When you get still, the suppressed emotions rise. The stories you've been avoiding start to echo. You feel your nervous system without distraction, and that can be overwhelming at first. But here's the truth. Discomfort in silence is not a sign that something's wrong. It's a sign that something's surfacing. It's like sediment rising to the surface of a still lake, not to drown you, but to be seen, released, and dissolved. And when you allow this process, you begin to reclaim the energy that was trapped in mental overdrive. Stillness is the reset button for identity. Every time you step into silence, you interrupt the identity loop. You stop being the name, the role, the job, the failure, the story. In the absence of constant thinking, there is no past to regret, no future to fear, no self to defend. You just are. And in that pure being, something subtle begins to happen. You realize you've been wearing a mask, multiple masks, built over time from what others told you, from what you feared, from who you thought you had to be. Stillness doesn't rip the mask off. It simply shows you that you don't need it anymore. You begin to feel what it's like to exist without narrative, without defense, without the ego's constant performance. That's not loss. That's freedom. Meditative practices to enter inner silence. You don't need a monastery. You don't need hours of chanting. You don't even need to sit cross-legged. You just need a moment of intention, repeated daily. Here are three powerful practices to access stillness and dissolve internal chaos. 1. The 1-minute reset. Wherever you are, stop. Close your eyes. Inhale slowly for 4 counts. Exhale even slower for 6. Do this for just 1 minute. No goal, no outcome. Just pure presence. You'll notice the mind wants to pull you away into tasks, timelines, commentary. That's okay. Come back to the breath, again and again. Stillness lives in your return, not in perfection. 2. Listen without input. Sit in silence without music, phone, or guidance. Instead of doing meditation, simply listen. To the hum of the air, to your heartbeat, to nothing. Allow thoughts to rise and fall like clouds. Don't hold them. Don't push them. Just observe. The key is not to stop thinking, but to stop following the thoughts. Eventually, something remarkable happens. You realize that you are not the thinker. You are the witness. And in that realization, mental noise begins to lose its grip. 3. The morning void practice. Before you touch your phone, before you talk to anyone, sit upright in bed and say, "Before I remember who I think I am, let me feel who I truly am." Then breathe in silence for 5 minutes. This practice unhooks you from yesterday's identity and gives you space to create yourself on purpose, from neutrality, from truth, not reaction. Stillness in the morning resets your internal compass before the world starts pulling on your energy. Why stillness is the shortcut. You could spend decades rearranging your thoughts, healing wounds one by one, analyzing patterns. And that path works. But there's a faster way. Go beyond the mind entirely. Sit in the space behind the thoughts. Rest in the awareness that watches it all. From here, you don't have to fix the mind, because you're no longer identified with it. In stillness, healing accelerates. Why? Because silence is a non-resistant state, and in non-resistance, energy flows again. The nervous system calms, the body heals, the soul breathes. This is why every spiritual tradition, every mystic, every awakened teacher returns to one truth. Be still and know. Know what? That you are not the chaos. That you are not the thought. That beneath all of it, you are whole. Stillness isn't the end, it's the portal. Stillness is not about withdrawal from life. It's not escapism, it's the opposite. It's how you re-enter the world with clarity, presence, and intention. It's how you become the calm in the storm. Not because you avoid the storm, but because you found the eye within it. In stillness, you stop reacting and start creating. You move from unconscious loops to conscious living, from egoic noise to embodied truth, from fear to freedom. Chapter 9. Installing the new operating system. Living as your future self. You've cleared the noise. You've touched stillness. You've witnessed your patterns from a higher perspective. Now the question is, what comes next? Transformation doesn't end with insight. Insight is only the doorway. Real change happens when you begin to live from a new internal blueprint. Not just think differently, but move, speak, choose, and respond as the version of you that already exists on the other side of resistance. This chapter is about integration, about locking in the reprogramming, about installing a new operating system, one that no longer runs on fear, survival, or outdated scripts, but on conscious identity, deliberate action, and aligned embodiment. If you've ever felt like you understand all this but keep slipping back into the old self, this is your missing link. Because becoming your future self is not about becoming someone else. It's about becoming fully you, without the protective layers. Why the mind defaults to the old program? Think of your subconscious mind like software, trained over years to run a certain script. That script includes your thoughts, habits, emotions, posture, tone of voice, expectations, and the way you see yourself. Even if you've outgrown the script, your body and nervous system might still be running it. Why? Because the subconscious doesn't respond to logic. It responds to repetition, familiarity, and emotional intensity. That's why reading a book or listening to an audiobook can spark a shift. But unless it's followed by new action, the old program slowly reboots. Not because you're weak, but because the current identity still feels safe to your nervous system. So to truly change, you need to do something revolutionary. Act from your new identity, before the mind catches up. This is how you install the new operating system. You don't wait for it to feel natural. You begin living as if, until it becomes natural. Embodying your future self, the three-step framework. To upgrade your internal operating system, you don't need to fake anything. You just need to act in alignment with who you already know you are becoming. Here's how. 1. Identity. Lock in. Know who you're being. First, get crystal clear on the identity you're stepping into. Ask yourself, How does this version of me think? What do they believe about life, themselves, others? How do they walk into a room? How do they handle challenges? What do they tolerate or no longer tolerate? This isn't about imagining a better version of you. It's about uncovering the truest version, the one beneath conditioning. Now, write it down, speak it, visualize it, and most importantly, begin being it. When the old voice says, "That's not you," respond with, "That wasn't me, but this is." 2. Action alignment. Don't just think it, prove it. Every identity is reinforced by behavior, so if you want to reprogram your subconscious, you must take actions that prove the new story to your body. Here's the trick. Start with small, measurable shifts. If your future self speaks with calm clarity, practice slowing your tone in conversation. If they prioritize health, make one decision today that reflects that, even if it's drinking more water or stretching for 5 minutes. If they set boundaries, say no where you once said yes. Each aligned action sends a signal to your nervous system, "This is who we are now." And over time, the body begins to believe it, not because you forced it, but because you lived it. 3. Reinforcement loops. Make it unshakable. Change sticks when it's anchored. Here's how to reinforce your new identity so it doesn't get overridden by stress or old environments. Morning identity installation. Each morning, repeat a phrase that locks in your new self. For example, "I'm not becoming, I'm being." "I move as my future self, now." "I already am who I choose to be." Environmental cues. Design your space to reflect your new identity. What books are visible? What reminders are on your mirror? What habits live on your calendar? Celebrate micro wins. Every time you show up as your new self, no matter how small, acknowledge it. Celebrate it. Your brain wires change through emotion. The more joy you attach to aligned action, the faster it sticks. What if you slip? You will. Not because you're broken, but because growth isn't linear. There will be days when the old identity sneaks back in. When the body chooses survival. When fear wins. That's okay. In fact, that's expected. The power isn't in never falling back. The power is in how quickly you remember who you are. The moment you notice yourself slipping, pause. Don't shame yourself. Don't spiral. Just return. Breathe. Re-anchor. Reclaim. The faster you realign, the stronger the neural pathway becomes. Living as your future self creates a new present. The most beautiful part of this work is that you don't have to wait for someday. You don't have to reach the perfect state of being before you start showing up. You create the future by becoming it now, not in theory, not in hope, but in daily embodiment. You are not waiting for change. You are the change. You are not hoping for clarity. You are choosing clarity. You are not trying to become confident. You are remembering confidence that's already yours. This isn't a mental exercise, it's a lifestyle. Integration isn't the end, it's the beginning. By now, you've dismantled the illusion, observed the chaos, found the silence, and begun the rewrite. But this work doesn't end here. Your life will keep offering opportunities to test, refine, and deepen this embodiment. Triggers will still come, but now they're teachers. Old patterns might resurface, but now you have tools. The goal is not perfection. The goal is presence. And presence will always bring you back home. Chapter 10. The Silent Revolution. Mastering the Inner World. This is where everything you've learned leads. Not to noise. Not to outward domination. But to quiet, deliberate mastery. This chapter is a reminder. And a call. A call to inner sovereignty. A call to the silent revolution that's been unfolding within you from the beginning. Because the most profound revolutions do not shout. They do not need permission. They do not beg the world to change. They become the change. The only battlefield that matters. You live in a world constantly demanding your attention. Opinions, distractions, comparison, urgency. You're told that to make a difference, you must fight, argue, hustle, win. But here's what the awakened know. The only battle worth winning is the one inside your own mind. Until your inner world is free, no external victory will feel safe. Until you master your thoughts, your emotions will rule you. Until you claim your own attention, the world will steal it. And until you remember who you are, not who you were taught to be, you'll keep handing your power away. So, let's make it plain. The world doesn't need more controlled people trying to control others. It needs more sovereign beings, grounded, awake, and unshakable. It needs people like you, not to rebel against the system, but to transcend it entirely. What mastery really means. Inner mastery isn't about always feeling calm or positive. It's not about suppressing emotion or pretending nothing touches you. It's about responsibility. It's the deep realization. My reaction is mine. My thoughts are mine. My peace is mine to protect. It's understanding that while you can't control everything, you can choose how you relate to everything. That's freedom. That's power. That's real control. Mastery is waking up each day and recommitting to yourself, to your awareness, to the truth behind the noise. The revolution has no banner. You won't get a medal for mastering your inner world. No one will clap when you breathe instead of lash out. No headline will run when you choose compassion over control. This work is invisible. It's unglamorous and it's hard. And still, it is the most radical thing you can do. Because once your mind is clear, you don't just change your own life. You ripple through your family, your relationships, your work, your world. You become the anchor in chaos, the still point in storms, the calm presence that reminds others, it's safe to come home to yourself. That's the revolution. Sovereignty is a practice, not a personality. You don't need to have all the answers to be free. You don't need to be perfect to be powerful. Inner sovereignty isn't something you achieve. It's something you practice. Daily, deliberately, quietly. It looks like noticing the thoughts before they run wild. Choosing stillness when reaction is louder. Asking, what's true for me? Before absorbing someone else's version of truth. Holding space for discomfort without making it mean something is wrong. Over time, this becomes your way of being. Not a technique, not a hack, a way of living. Let the mind serve, not lead. The mind is a beautiful servant, sharp, strategic, capable. But it was never meant to be in charge. When the mind leads, life becomes a calculation, full of doubt, fear, and second-guessing. When you lead and the mind serves, life becomes art. You don't need to kill the ego or erase your thoughts. You just need to know who you are beneath them, the master behind the machine. Commitment, not conclusion. This chapter isn't an ending. It's a beginning. You've peeled back layers. You've remembered truths. You've touched the stillness beneath your noise. But this work doesn't stop here. Because awakening isn't a moment. It's a commitment. There will be days when the old self knocks on your door, when fear sneaks in, when doubt plays its greatest hits. On those days, don't look for escape. Look inward, breathe, observe, respond. As the version of you that has always been waiting beneath the noise, that is your revolution. And no one can take it from you. A quiet power that changes everything. Let this be your mantra. I don't need to control the world to master myself. I don't need to fix everything to feel whole. I am already who I choose to be. Now. You don't need more information. You need integration, not more seeking, more being. This audiobook has simply reminded you of what was never lost. You are not your patterns. You are not your past. You are not your mind. You are the one who sees all of it and chooses differently. That is your gift. That is your power. And that is how the world changes. Not through noise, but through a silent revolution. One awakened mind at a time. One awakened mind at a time.